In the words of the psychologist Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning, quote, "Suffering ceases to be suffering at the moment it finds a meaning, such as the meaning of a sacrifice." And so
Wow.
that's my hope.
Wow. Amen. Which means so be it. Amen.
Oh,
Thank you.
I thought it was like a grammatical error.
Vente conmigo, amigo, hablar y caminar, porque el camino se hace al andar. Vente conmigo, amigo, hablar y caminar, porque el camino se hace al andar.
Hey, brother Marcos.
Hey, brother Jim.
On this episode of our grown-up show and tell, I would like to share some bits and pieces from something that I've been working on that I plan to release soon, hopefully by the time this comes out. I'm planning for a release of October 4th, and that's of my upcoming poetry chapbook, which is a small book of poetry. There are 17 poems here. It's a little taste of my poetry. And it's called Love and Other Reasons Not to Live. And before you come away with a certain interpretation of the book based on the title should catch your attention. But what I wanted to show here is there is a difference between the title and some of the content, right? And the reason it's love and other reasons not to live is because for a time, love was a reason that the character here did not want to live. And by the end of the book, he does. I would just advise people looking into the book to not come away with the idea that the book is arguing that love is not a reason to live. But love is complex, and there are some circumstances, counterintuitively, where love can be hurtful and a reason for existential crisis. Certainly, depending on what's going on in your life. And so, yeah, there's this natural contradiction there. Just be mindful of that. Reading into it, it's a deeply personal chapbook. And it's difficult to write and difficult to read as well. So this is kind of hard for me to do. But I feel like it was a really impactful time in my life. And I want to dedicate some piece of writing to that piece of time, so that I can then move on.
So if anyone listening is going through a mental health crisis, especially if you're experiencing any thoughts of self-harm, you can call 988 in New York and many places to talk to someone urgently. Your life matters. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for that. I think let's open up with the introduction to the piece. I think that'll help orientate people on what the chapbook is about, what my intentions are. And yeah, let's begin with that.
Great.
Let's do it.
Andamos.
Introduction. In 2015, I came terrifyingly close to taking my own life, saved only by a well-timed phone call and true compassion. The way I was living was devoid of meaning. External factors, malice, made it harder than it needed to be. I'm in a much better place now, but it took incredible effort to reach an escape velocity from the gravity well of depression I was in. In short, I had to change my life, to rig the game in my favor in every way possible. Eat better, supplement, exercise more, get more sunlight, get out more, spend more time with friends and family, seek out love and better employment, and so on. I wanted to ensure that I'd never go back to that place, that I'd always have the strength to fight. At the heart of that existential crisis is love, a dangerous thing, giving life meaning and, in its absence, taking meaning away. Yes, there was a girl. We are no longer together, but my, what a whirlwind. These poems capture the emotional and psychological context of that period in my life. It begins with anxiety and depression and continues chronologically through love and loss. Suffering can create deeper meaning. It can also kill you. It did not kill me. My hope is that by the end of this little book, there is deeper meaning for you somewhere, as there was for me. So
Jim, your prose can be awfully poetic sometimes.
It's something I work on, yes. So based on that introduction, what do you think? Do you have questions about what is said in the introduction that you think might be relevant to talk about or to help orientate us on our journey through some dark poems, but also some, by the end, some hopeful poems. And let me just say before people go any further, right, as we talked about, these are some heavy themes, this should serve as a bit of a trigger warning. There is talk about suicidal ideation, dark feelings, and also some curse words and so on. So with that said, what do you think?
I think it's a beautiful little book, and I'd suggest reading it in one sitting. And sort of at least the first time, letting it all kind of wash over and go, maybe back to specific poems. But there's sort of a narrative arc if you take the poems together, and and that it's good. Yeah, it's pretty powerful to take that journey. I think it seems like from your introduction, you're giving this interesting and meaningful warning about, I think in my faith tradition, in a sense, you might describe it in terms of idolatry, putting faith in something that can't save you. So sort of like reasons not to live for. You know, and then paradoxically, there's that really striking phrase. For me, the way you deployed it was something about the effort to achieve escape velocity from a gravity well of depression, which you could look at as reasons to live, you know? But that would distill them, that would reduce what you described there down to reason, you know, down to that would idealize what you describe, and really what you describe is, right, effort, activity, the, you know, embodied work.
That's well said. Yeah, another way of describing the philosophy, I guess, of the work is it has a existentialist tint to it. Yeah, it's about finding meaning, and you know, how meaningful is life in the absence of love? If you feel that you are star-crossed, then how do you move on from that?
I think you deal with absence of love. Maybe you do. I noticed you dealing with the aftermath of love. Or the loss, right? Aftermath of love lost.
Yeah, but it's not just that. It really isn't. I don't know how good of a job I do in explaining all of that. These poems are difficult to write because there's to some extent, and this was a criticism of me while doing a poetry workshop in grad school, that I can be kind of selfish when I write poetry. I don't let people in. And these poems in particular, this book in particular, has been very difficult for me to write because these are very personal, private details. I go to great lengths to not say certain things. You know, the person whom this is about is you know, I'm protecting her identity, okay? And there are other things that I just don't want to talk about that are too private. But at the same time, I'm also trying to tell you everything that's important in that moment for that poem. And I think through the course of 17 poems, you should have a good idea of what it's about. And yeah, a lot of it, especially the latter half, has to do with the after effects of love lost. But you know, I added a poem or two that focused more on sort of at the last minute, that focused a little bit more on that time before and that time during, which were also very painful. So hopefully that helps to clarify.
It's okay, sure.
All right, so I thought it might be interesting to ask you, since you've had some chance to read it, and again, I apologize for sending poems at the last minute. I don't know how much time you've had to look at those, but if there is a poem that you want to talk about or that you would like for me to read, I think that would be a good or interesting way to start. And yeah, what do you think?
I'd ask you to read and then discuss in the terms that you're comfortable with the poem titled Incident.
Okay.
If you're comfortable with that.
I did write this, and I should be able to read it, I feel like.
My second choice would be Heart Song.
Okay, I do want to read Heart Song, but you know what? I'll read that next.
Okay.
I was thinking about reading that one, actually.
Heart Song is good, but in a sense it could, there's an interesting contrast in how different strengths between those two poems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let's start out with incident. There are more specifics in certain poems. So incident attempts to provide some of those specifics. It was one of those poems I realized, wait a second, I'm missing like basically the key event in the story. And so this is the darkest moment of, I've been calling it the narrator. Really, these are my poems. This is about me.
Well, it's you in four dimensions, right? In a certain time and context. So yes. I think the narrator is kind of a helpful way to be able to be in this moment, you know, as yourself, and then describe the text in maybe a different moment and context, you know? So either one, I'm fine with.
Okay. These are very personal events, so it's just hard for me to separate it as happening sort of somewhat abstractly to a character,
it's understandable.
It's personal, and it's put into writing that captures a specific moment at a specific time. Let's look at this very personal poem, maybe the darkest poem in the whole piece, and then we can discuss. Incident. I'd gotten us in with my alumni card, and we walked on the parade, just us and stars, as if I'd rented out the place. I still have the pics. In the auditorium, you used the podium. I tried not to laugh and to get you to stop. We walked through the halls, past old classrooms, I pointed out. Then a pause, a call, a friend. I left you, the first to give me a chance, maybe the only, with him. And there were the other things. The rain hides tears. No need for an umbrella. A bridge. Possibility. But no. A fence. They had thought of that. A tower. A way out. But how to reach top? Home it was. In a warm bath, quietly. But somehow, you knew enough to call. This moment was when my suicidal ideation reached its peak, pretty much. There were some moments after that. There was a slow kind of recovery. But this was a very, very scary time, as you read through some of these stanzas. The act of existing was too painful at that moment. And so that I think captures suicidal ideation. depression. I think if people are not familiar with it or would like to understand it, like one way I would describe it is to say that that existing itself is torture. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you wanted to respond to the poem or what I said.
Well, it's a beautiful poem.
Thank you.
You go remarkably far with extraordinary economy. You go really far in very few words. And the deliberate way that you read it lets kind of gave time for each of the beats to come across, you know. So I was imagining a scene. Yeah, that right, because you don't just in the auditorium, you use the podium. I tried not to laugh and get you to stop. And a scene could break out from there, right? So this could be the spine of a larger story. And I imagine those little hints of those scenes kind of acting out in the background.
Yeah, the scenes, they're meant to give just enough to, mm-hmm. as you said, to let the reader understand what is going on. I'm trying to paint a picture of basically a date or something like a date. And there's fun. And something unexpected happens, but this also happens in a larger context, and there's a reference to that, right? When I say, and there were the other things, so I don't want to make the character seem like, I don't want to make the character seem like he's only, like he's just become suicidal over a girl, you know, sort of, like running into the competition or something. There are other things going on, but as I said, some things I selfishly keep out.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty generous poem. Now, I missed that, those two lines, and there were other things, you know, or I missed the notion. I didn't have a sense of what those other things were. You know, that they might be other things weighing on you, you know, or weighing on the narrator.
Yeah, it's just meant as like as a context. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it works. I mean, I see that now. And yeah, I think it's cool that you didn't. There's a universality of the voice in terms of gender.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there it's possible to read it and imagine probably for any reader to imagine gender and intimacy as they experience it, right?
It's you're right. That there's an intention to make it a bit more universal.
As you say, existential, right? So it give me a chance as a some sort of gateway to meaning is implied there, but it's not
certainly
defined or limited.
There is a
and then there is a gendered pronoun, though, maybe the only with him, which yeah. I'm not sure I know what it means, but that's fine. I think it's actually interesting.
Yeah, I was trying to do something about that gender in the poem and the poetry, and I didn't want to stick gender where I didn't have to, but in this particular line, I chose to put gender, because if I didn't, I'm just, it's too open for me. And the point of putting gender here, at the last line of the stanza, I left you the first to give me a chance, maybe the only, with him. It's to imply like a romantic rival to the heart of the well, the girl. So I found it relevant here, but it, you know, what you say is true. I mean, it's hard to strike a balance with, you know, a universal design and also with something deeply personal. Anything else on this poem?
Yeah, I'd just say that it's got more significance in context and how it falls within the chapbook.
Yeah, I don't want to say too much, but this is a pretty pivotal moment in the book. It's the darkest time, right? It's the closest the character comes to taking his own life. But that doesn't mean that it's all good after that. It's actually, in some sense, it kind of gets harder after that.
Yeah. Oh, and I think this is the last thing I was thinking of that I wanted to share, that I think it's meaningful that the scene described is not depressing, yet you get a sense that about the character experiencing depression. They don't seem crazy in a sense, you know. There's just these two planes of experience.
That's an interesting way of putting it. There's a contrast in this poem. The part of the point of that contrast is to show, like reflecting back on the title, why something like love can lead to something as paradoxical as not wanting to live, right? Because, you know, on the earlier stanza, there's a date situation, right? Where there's hope, there's laughter, there's opportunity. And then there seems to be sort of a giving up. And if the character sort of didn't have that hope to begin with, then maybe the character, again, this is the thinking at the time, then maybe the character wouldn't feel like taking his own life. So yeah, that just highlights this somewhat counterintuitive notion that love or the desire for love, when you are star-crossed, when you can't have it, perhaps can lead to some dark things if you don't have deeper meaning. So I think I would like to at most touch on two other poems. Let's look at Heart Song, which reflects on love. There was a relationship between these two characters, the main character and, for lack of a better term, the love interest.
How do you feel about the term the beloved?
Perfect. The beloved. That makes me think of Toni Morrison.
Whoa, yeah.
And yeah, in some sense, love lost kind of haunts you, you know? Okay, perfect. Let's look at Heart Song. Heart Song. The heart is a drum. beating for a time, a song of ice and fire, like Martin. Though, like Frost, either would suffice. For the words, worms, yet we sing like an idiot, full of sound and fury, like Faulkner, like a child being born. I have loved and lost, and lost and lost, and still I have room enough to love and lose again. It's an acquired taste, like acid or medic. If I should stay singular, like a worm without a hole, I would like to do so bigly, not blame those who left or who never loved me. For I have been and will but be stubbornly myself. Let's reflect on this. I'd like to just kind of a priori ask, you know, a reader or someone who listens to one of my poems, what it made them feel or think about. And it doesn't really matter what my intention was. I mean, you know, the author is dead, is the expression. maybe not the best expression to use in this context, but the author is definitely not dead. But regardless of my intentions, what did it make you feel and think about?
Oh, I think this one is uplifting and lyrical, and I guess that maybe says something about my experience with emotional pain and depression, and my for sources of hope for the worst case scenarios, or at least for hope after loss and after failure.
Definitely. That's definitely correct. It's this poem is towards the end of the chapbook, and it is the character reflecting on life and love, and you know, he has to decide, you know, are you just gonna the form the fetal position and not love because it's painful, and there is opportunity for more hurt, or will he love again? Will he be open to love again? And so I think it balances hope with realism. You know, like the character is not trying to be naive. You know, you know, the line, and still I have room enough to love and lose again. I mean, that's what love is, right? Like, to open yourself up to bleed potentially. And then it's also about sort of the finite human existence, you know, because it's like, you know, it's this sort of this dance that we do, you know, a song. I once heard this really beautiful metaphor that a song is beautiful because it ends, you know, if it just kind of went on forever, not as beautiful.
It could just be background noise, sort of.
So it captures some of that, and And so this is about love, right? But it's about meaning. It's about living. So it is love and other reasons not to live. It's also love and reasons to live. So I appreciate you earlier bringing that to my attention. Like, there does seem to be a contradiction here between the content and the title. But I feel like there is a way in which that is true for the character during these dark times. Were there any lines that that you found interesting or caught your attention, either in the first two stanzas or the last one?
No, there's nothing interesting here.
Let me talk about one of my favorite lines.
Which in a sense, right, like that's like, okay. And if you're getting like critiqued, that's sort of what you're hoping for, right? Like, no, nothing interesting. Because it worked as a whole. You know what I'm saying?
That's a positive spin.
I'm just kidding. So there's a lot that's interesting. Go ahead. What did you want to highlight?
My favorite line in the whole thing is if I should stay singular, like a worm without a hole, yes, I would like to do so weakly. I like the fact that I put weakly in a poem, and it has, and it's in a line by itself, and it represents like this, the, you know, individual nature, the uniqueness of the human condition, right? We are all unique in that nobody is us, right? We're all individuals, and that's liberating, and that's beautiful. And there's no shame in being who you are. And I love that I can express that with just one word, wiggly.
Wepa. That's fire, man.
Thank you.
I have no kvetches about the lack of punctuation, which is often difficult for me, but it was not distracting. In this whole chapbook, I don't think I had that.
Nice.
Be a problem.
What I tried to do is use capital letters to indicate the start of a new sentence. But I didn't use commas and periods and other punctuations, because I tried to just let the line breaks speak for that.
Sure.
And the line breaks also tell you sort of how to read the poem, you know, when you're reading it out loud. When something is on another line, you pause, and then you go to the other line, and you pause at the end of the line.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of helps me to read it and not worry about punctuation. But yeah, I recognize it could also be frustrating for some. I appreciate the insight.
I think it's good. I like the alternate convention is good. Well, and actually, Jim, let me say that, yeah, it's good, and I can see how for verse it is cool to not have punctuation, that's to just have one convention in terms of the flow of thoughts, right? And it does sometimes happen that in poetry that you have to decide how, you know, am I gonna read this with the through the stanza, through the line formation, or I'm going to read this through the punctuation. And yeah, that I find that doesn't, I guess that could, if you're at a certain virtuoso level, that could be how you play 3D chess, you know, as the author, but I've more often just found that distracting. So this is working.
Yeah. Another reason I do it this way is in many of the poems, I think you might notice I'm trying to capture the essence of thoughts, you know, the way, like a stream of consciousness. And so thoughts kind of just come about, and they don't have clear periods or commas or subjects, or sometimes verbs, right? They're just sort of pictures, and trying to capture that too.
Words.
Words.
and that, yeah, it allows the words to have a certain kind of wordlessness.
Yeah, it works in other poems more, in some poems more than others.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And then Wiggly.
Yeah.
Stands alone.
it's one of my proudest achievements. maybe not, but I'm still happy with it. Okay, so shall we move on to Hamlet?
All right.
Hamlet, I don't want to give too much of a preamble. It used to be the very last poem in the piece. I've since added another poem. I'm still structuring this, so if you're listening to this, I'm going to be working on it until the deadline to make it as good as possible. So things might change.
Mm-hmm.
Hamlet was originally at the end, and now there's another poem called Hands. That's at the end. That's reflecting on, it's sort of like my message to her, or the character's message to her.
To the beloved.
To the beloved. Thank you. Like what, given all the time that has passed, what would he like to say to her? And that's what Hands is about. Hamlet, in Hamlet. So I'm a lit major, or was, and I've taken many courses where, you know, Shakespeare was part of the content. I have a deep appreciation and love for Shakespeare, and especially of Hamlet. And Hamlet maybe is most famous for the soliloquy. The to be soliloquy.
Mm-hmm.
And part of my goal actually is to memorize the whole thing, but I have not, you know. I can only say, if you'll indulge me, I can only say this much. To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles and by opposing end them. That's what I have so far.
There you go. That's the question.
So and it's a longer soliloquy than that for sure. And it's much deeper, but
yeah,
ultimately the soliloquy is about why live. And this poem is sort of, I'm going to make a joke here, but it's going to make more sense when you see the poem. This is my middle finger to that existential question, my to be. Hamlet. To dream, to hope, to risk living, to not simply exist, to appreciate the unreason for giving me everything, to bleed slowly, lost in now, never knowing what is, to be like Hamlet, like a bird in the air. This, the trees, the mountains, the seas, the clouds' slow dance overhead, the overthinking art making to last a little longer. The losing of self somewhere in the movie of thoughts. And finding it again in others.
Woo!
Okay, so what does this poem make you think about or feel?
Like, Hamlet could have been a lot shorter. Yeah. This is dope, man. This is dope. And a few words and a lot going on. And yeah, it's a remarkable achievement, man. It's like the Mark Twain saying, I think it was Mark Twain, didn't have time to write you a short letter, so I wrote you a long one. And here there's a sense that this is a long time coming, short, you know, series of short letters. And yes, there's quite a lot of distillation.
I like that you said that. A lot of the events that take place in the poems in the chapbook, there have been many years that have passed by. Mm-hmm. Approaching 10 years since, really about 10 years since, like, the very, if we're just talking about, like, before the relationship, just
mm-hmm.
depression and so on.
Mm.
And so, yeah, a lot of this is reflecting on life. I think people who have gone through significant breakups, especially love, right? When you've actually loved the person, I think those are particularly meaningful. But even if you haven't gone through something like that, I think older individuals who can reflect on meaningful moments in their lives can also relate a lot here. And yeah, a lot of it is trying to condense down deeply personal things. And I think part of what I'm trying to do in these poems as well is to write to myself and tell myself to be. For years hence, right? It's almost like this is a letter for me for all time, right? Like, you know, 20 years hence or 30 years hence, I can read these and remember. It's as if I'm writing to that time, right? And I can remember why I choose to be, if for any reason I should forget.
Mm. Epa. That was a poem.
I tend to do that.
Yeah, I find that the economy here gives the reader the opportunity to fill things in from their imaginations, from their life, maybe from other literature, maybe from other media, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so on the one hand, because I know I associate you with certain campuses, and there's the one on a campus, partly at least, right? The alumni card, and then the schools, or the old classrooms and stuff, and the auditorium. And I picture Yeah, so I keep thinking of these movies that have campus. These, I got a line. I rose from the ashes of the 70s ballads. And what I'm thinking of the most is songs from sad romantic movies mm-hmm. that my mom loved from the 70s. So The Way We Were and Love Story in particular. And they've got these campus scenes. And then it's also like life after it's college and then like life after college. And yeah. So anyhow, I was thinking I find myself volunteering these, or I find my brain volunteering these images of, yeah, these images that aren't in the text, you know,
sure.
But the text kind of leaves space for, you know, for one thing.
I think that's beautiful that you can, that this can inspire your brain to do those things. Yeah.
I think maybe a little bit the voice is evoking that as well.
That's interesting.
Because these are, in both of those are not rom-coms, right? those are cerebral, sad romances, you know, but beautiful. And bro, I haven't, for some reason, I was thinking of these two films recently, so I looked back and saw clips. I haven't watched the whole thing in a long time, but Love Story, for example, starts with this striking, poetic, but very spare monologue that really sounds like it could be from this chapbook. And it's something like, what can you say about a girl who dies? You know, or something like that, you know. And then it's just very... it's very spare, and the voice kind of, reminded me of that as well. And then I'm thinking about this contrast between when you are old and gray and full of sleep and dreaming by the fire, right? Do you know that prelude to this text from Yeats that I've set, right? Think of the look your eyes had once and of their shadows deep. How many loved your moments of glad grace and loved your beauty with love false or true, but one man loved the pilgrim soul in you. I like that, but I think it's idolatry also. Mm-hmm. I think you're grasping on to something that can't save you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're grasping on to and we've got relatively strong BS meters, both of us, you know, and the economy of the language sort of I don't know, how do you think of the economy of the language here? Are you intentionally rejecting romanticism? To be grounded in existentialism, do you think consciously think of that as being materially grounded in some sense rather than idealistically, or is that not, or do you have different frames than those?
Well, like to answer your first question, am I rejecting romanticism?
Yeah.
It depends what you mean by romanticism. Like, in some sense, no. Because if we're defining romanticism as like a focus on emotion and the value of the non-rational elements of the human condition. And I would say no, not completely, because love, I mean, part of what I'm saying in this thing is love is kind of irrational.
Mm-hmm.
Because if my character didn't pursue it, like he wouldn't have had suicidal ideation, he wouldn't expose himself to the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. So in that sense, no, right? The character is irrational in being a romantic, in the sense that he wants to fall in love. He recognizes that this is not something he can ground in logic. That it's just part of the human condition. Yeah. So in that sense, from what I understand about your question, like, I would say I'm not rejecting it. I'm not sure how that relates to the word economy. Maybe I'm influenced a little bit by Ezra Pound and like the imagism and the stream of consciousness and trying to just capture images and not to be bound by the grammatical or even semantic conventions. If that makes any sense. Like, mm-hmm. Whenever I write a poem, I had this really great graduate instructor. Oh man, I'm blanking on her name. Elaine Equis, I think her name was. And part of what I learned in her poetry workshop is just how amorphous poetry is, and in some sense irrational. And so every time I write a poem, I try to forget how to write a poem. And there's this beautiful post by, let me just say this real quick, sorry. I know this is a bit tangential, but there was a classmate of mine who's very well known, Melissa Broder, very successful author. I went to graduate school with actually a number of people who are fairly well known. I went to school also with Lisa Koh, who also critically acclaimed and so on. But Melissa Broder wrote this article that I read. I forget exactly the title of the article. I think it's something like The Art of Vanishing or something. And she writes that she has no idea how she wrote the poetry that she has written. So it's the most beautiful form of vanishing. It almost doesn't even have an explanation. And so in some sense, this is not too dissimilar from the ancient Greek ideas of the muse, right, being possessed by divine inspiration. And so these poetry for me is that. It's trying to live for the first time on the page and imagining a world that I'm not in, and writing for that world. If that relates to the word economy, then great. But that's just about me and how I write poems. This has been a pleasant experience. As I said, it's hard for me to read some of these poems. Maybe the first poem that we read, that I read, Incident, it was the hardest of the three. And so I really hope that listeners go out and buy the book. I will do a discount for the first month. So it'll come out August 4th. And for the month of August, it'll be available for $1, right? So this is not a money grab by me. I honestly almost wanted to make it free. But you know what? You know, At the end of the discount, it'll be $3, very affordable, and it is self-published, and I hope that you read the book, because as I say in the introduction, my goal is that these experiences have helped make me into a stronger person with more meaning in my life, and I hope to be able to inspire that in other people. I can't promise to give other people meaning through these poems, but I hope that these poems can help someone get closer to meaning in their own lives, to put meaning into past relationships, especially to anyone who's ever experienced suicidal ideation. You know, just know that that you're not alone, and that people have made it to the other side of depression. I have, and so and you can too, even if while that is happening, it doesn't seem to be true. If you put effort, a lot of effort into overcompensating for depression, like I've found that to be a useful strategy, to rig the game in your favor in every possible way. And you know, as Viktor Frankl says, in the words of the psychologist Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning, quote, "Suffering ceases to be suffering at the moment it finds a meaning, such as the meaning of a sacrifice." And so,
wow,
that's my hope.
Wow. Amen. Which means, amen. So be it. Amen.
Thank you. I thought it was like a grammatical error. just messed up all the meaningful stuff.
Well, yeah. Suffering can turn into a sacrifice. It can turn into a joke.
Yeah. Shakespeare's tragic comedies are an interesting take on life's darker themes, right? It's like he's saying a few things in the tragic comedies, these more complex Shakespearean plays that are hard to categorize.
Yeah.
It's and sometimes it's saying that laughter is the best medicine.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
But I like to think it's also about, like, hope means that you can laugh even in, you know, a Nazi concentration camp.
Yeah. 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 Give us that. Yeah. Survivor of Hitler's killing. Industrialized killing machine. Give us that quote from Viktor Frankl one more time, please.
Yes. Suffering ceases to be suffering at the moment it finds a meaning, such as the meaning of a sacrifice. Mm. Thank you so much, Brother Marcos. This was
what? Amen. Amen. This is fun. Haciendo el camino al andar and finding sentido en el camino.
Al andar hasta la utopía.
Sí, sí, señor. En el horizonte. In the distance. All right. Till the next one. Gracias.
Peace.
And love.